Hello everyone, welcome to the fourth episode of the Indian Cycling Podcast brought to you by The Bike Affair, your one-stop destination for all the events, personalities and discussions on cycling in India. I'm your host Harsha.
Hi there, this is Gokul, your co-host.
And we have a guest today, Akash Panda. Akash actually made a cameo appearance on the second episode, the handicap race and Hyderabad racing circuit. He was the fastest rider in the handicap race. We'll introduce Akash in a bit, but before that, I just wanted to take a moment and thank all the listeners for the support we have received. Our podcast came out over the weekend on Apple and Google Podcasts. We were waiting for it to show up on these two apps before we started informing everyone. The response has been pretty good. Everyone I talk to tells me it's a novel idea and we feel like we are on the right path. Gokul, what did you think?
Other than exposing the variety of odd sounding fillers that I have, it is pretty good. Jokes apart, as an entrepreneur, I always learned and realized that if you do things which you love, success will follow. So we have been really having a good time recording and doing all the associated work for this podcast. So hope we are talking all the relevant stuff for the audience, and the biggest challenge as I see will be to keep this consistent and doing the relevant topics.
Yeah, I was actually very excited to see my name on iTunes. I arranged the iTunes album on my Mac such that my name came up beside Adele. So that was fun. I wanted to walk around telling people iTunes hosts my content and Adele's songs. I spread it to some podcast virgins in my office. They didn't actually understand why this dude was so excited about, something they'd never heard of.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I really don't know who Adele is, but I do know you and I'm very proud to know you.
Okay, so we at the end of this episode, let us listen to a song by Adele, okay? We can't play it on the episode because of, copyright. Intellectual property and copyright issues. So good stuff. So Akash, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi. So I'm a 26-year-old guy working at Amazon here in Hyderabad. I'm from Mumbai. I've been in Hyderabad since the last 3 years. All right, so to backtrack a bit, I was a typical studious nerd you all know about. I was never into sports. However, I played some volleyball in school, but that was it. And I came upon cycling as a means to commute to office when I got a full-time offer here at Amazon. And I remember Chitti asking me to join one of the weekend rides. Chitti is the technician at the Bike Affair. And from then, I was quickly reeled into the world of bike racing. And presently, I manage a full-time job with a passion to race.
Yeah, just to interrupt here, he told his age, but he didn't tell his height. he's 6'3", and we have been really finding it difficult to get frames that fit him. So it is coincidental that we talked about Caden some time ago. One of my first thoughts and experiences of Akash was I saw him climbing up Microsoft one day on his Fuji hybrid bike, and he had this really high cadence and he was going up that hill really fast. So I don't remember who I told, whether it was Sampath or Chitti, and I told him that this guy is good, we should really get him into more serious biking. And he started riding with us on his hybrid, and while we were on our road bikes and just making us suffer. So I realized even at that early point that he's going to be a good cyclist. Coming back, Akash, tell me a little bit about your short and long term goals.
Well, the short term goals right now is to get stronger and build a solid base for the coming years, and also to do well in the community level races across India. To get a bit more long term to the end of the year, I want to win the Telangana state championships and also do well in the nationals road races and individual time trial events. Beyond that, I haven't planned yet, but I'll definitely be racing somewhere.
Cool.
So I can set a nice target, long term target for you.
Yeah.
Are you up for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You want me to go for it?
Yeah, sure.
So why don't you try and win the Tour of France?
That is a perfectly good long term goal.
I mean, you're young and you know you don't lack for enthusiasm.
Yeah, I'll definitely write down in my diary.
Yeah, okay. I mean, nobody uses diaries, but, you know.
Exactly. So,
so Gokul, you and Akash were away in Bangalore this weekend participating in the BBCH or Bangalore Bicycle Championships. In the time trial event. And Gokul, you came in third.
Mm.
So can you tell us a little bit about this event?
Yeah, sure. BBCH, as you already explained the full form, is one of the longest running amateur racing circuits in the country. And it is really grown by leaps and bounds, and it is quite professionally organized. They publish a full calendar for the year. They have both road and mountain bike races throughout. And this year they have five of each mountain bike and road races, and five different types of races. For example, they started this season with a individual time trial. They have a criterium. They have a flat mass start road race. They have a uphill finish mass start road race, and a team time trial, and so on. So. It's almost like the complete bouquet of races, road races is covered, and similarly they have different categories in mountain bike races as well. So you can of course find more details about them by searching them and following them on Facebook, Bangalore Bicycle Championships, or go and visit their website www.bbch.in.
So let's talk a bit about the ITT or the individual time trial. What is the event and how long is it?
Yeah, so individual time trial, as the name says, is a rider going as fast as he or she can to get the best time over a predefined course. The BBCH ITT in particular was 33.5 kilometers, and there were multiple categories in it for under 18, women, amateur, elite, and masters. Masters were above 35 years.
Above 40, right?
I think above 35.
Oh, yes. No, I think that's about 40.
Anyways,
I didn't
really
look at it.
Okay. So, yeah, so BBCH ITT has always been a key event in the season. And you're sure to witness some of the fastest riders in all over the country coming to Bangalore and racing their heart out. Also, one thing I remember, which one of the best riders in India, Navin John, had said, that a top five in BBCH races is bound to make you one of the key parts of the Indian cycling. So,
wow.
That is one thing you have to keep in mind before racing here.
I was reading about time trials, and the most common mistake apparently in this event is something called the J profile, as in effectively tiring yourself out with too much effort in the beginning and running out of gas towards the end. So what does a typical strategy in an event like this look?
Yeah, so to begin with, ITDs, they were never a race I liked until last year. I despised getting on the aero bars and suffering. I remember the mishap which happened to me in Nationals where my aero bars got loose, and that was one of the events which have made me hate this event more. But then when I started training under Gokul earlier this year, he told me that to give TTs a try and made sure that I put on my aero bars a month or two before the month and a half before the event. And I was doing all my workouts on aero bars. Slowly but surely, I started liking the concept of just resting your arms on the bars and just hammering out the power. To talk about the J profile or going too hard in the start, as intuitive as it sounds, it is much harder to implement and control yourself to not go hard in the start. My strategy was to do the same. I intended to do a negative split in terms of power, meaning that I would go a little bit lower than my threshold power capacity for half the distance, and for the rest of the distance, I would just keep on increasing the power above my threshold.
So basically, you would put in less effort in the beginning, and progressively
increase.
So that's what a negative split is, because
yes.
the only time I heard negative splits was when people talk about marathons, like they talk about like negative split because they want to run the first 21 actually a little slower, hoping that they'll conserve energy. So
it is the same.
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
Right. So Google, your strategy, how did you crack the code here?
should I reveal all?
Yes.
But this is going to be a long one. An individual time trial is one in which the rider starts one by one, and they have to ride without drafting another person. So that is why we are allowed to use these aero bars. I will come back to that, the origin and the history behind the aero bars subsequently later in this episode. So it is, the position is different. So I split my strategy into twofold. One was the preparation phase, and the second was the actual race day strategy, if I may say so. So the preparation was all about getting comfortable with the position. So it started about 6 weeks before the actual race, when me and Akash decided to go for this BBCH race. And Pasha helped me a lot with fine-tuning this position. We spent a lot of time on the trainer in the store. I borrowed Sampath's aero bars and put it on my bike, and started getting more comfortable on that position, trying to get more aerodynamic. I was watching myself on the blank TV screen right in front of the store just to see if my position was okay, and so that's how it started. And after a few rides, we went out on the road. The first time we went out, it wasn't great. I realized that neither was I very aero, and nor was I able to generate power in that position. This is something which is important for everybody to understand, that actually the muscles which are utilized for generating power slightly vary because of the shift of position, you know, because you are more aero and bending further forward. So you need to get used to that posture, and the first time I went out on the road, it was very bad actually. And so it wasn't very encouraging, but I kept up with it. Pasha continued to help me, and the second time we went out and had a great session. I was super happy that I really cracked it, and I was about to share that with Akash when he came and said that, did you realize the strong aero, the tailwind that we had? And I cracked the KOM. So I was just rolling down that hill when he said that. So, but I did feel that I was still ready, and I had got what I could achieve best out of that position, and the ability to generate power in that position. So.
Yeah. Oh man, sorry about killing your hype about the practice, but I have been learning this from Harsha actually. So in the past handicap race, he actually taught me how to sledge, start sledging and bring down the other riders. So apparently it is working for me.
In my defense, we talked about this in the second episode, and it worked. Okay, he was the fastest racer.
Yeah, but besides the sledging, Gokul seemed to have a good race. Gokul, can you walk us through that?
Yeah, so we reached a day before the race on Saturday, and trying to combine multiple things, I had set up a meeting with a business meeting that day, and I didn't realize it was so far off, and I ended up traveling about 70 kilometers in the metro and local buses that day, and I was super tired when I came back. My lunch was out of went for a toss, and I was pretty upset by the end of the day. I was thinking that I really messed it up, realized that I should not have gone for that meeting, or at least planned better so that I was not so tired by the end of the day. But anyways, one good thing was I did reach home a little earlier and decided to, you know, hit the bed early. Remember, Akash, we are seeing that guy who was doing that Niseko Classic UCI Grand Fondo Tour event of 2017, and this guy had recorded a whole 4-hour 140 kilometers race, and we are just seeing how, and it was, the video was overlaid with this all this data, the parameters like the power, heart rate, elevation gain, gradient, and so on, and it was super exciting to watch. And we retired with that, and thanks to Akash, we also had a very good breakfast planned for the next day. So thankfully I woke up pretty refreshed, and thanks to also the organizers, BBCH, what they had done was they had given us the start time for each of us a day before, and suggested that it is enough if you are just there at the start point half an hour before our designated start time. That really helped us to save some more time and get some more sleep in the morning. And based on my past timings and the equipment changes that I had, set up a target of around 38 kilometers per hour, and we had also realized that a warm-up is very important for a time trial, because you mentioned about negative splits and starting slower, but yeah. I would like to qualify that, you know, nobody wins a race for riding slower, right? So it is slower.
But that was going to be my strategy for next year. Oh man.
So it's extremely relative, no? So you are still riding the fastest, obviously, right? However, you want to pace yourself in the most efficient way, and the negative splits or the is just one way of doing that pacing, such that you are riding a bit lower than your highest possible, and you are kind of peaking towards the end of the race. It's more or less like accelerating out of a traffic signal, but just prolonged over 33 kilometers. Mm-hmm. I started the warm up and we reached earlier, but Akash had a flat and he was kind of freaking out. So I came back, and thankfully we could borrow a tube from somebody, and I set up Akash. I saw that Akash was sorted out, and then I went back and I kind of had to re-strategize my warm up, because I had just 5-10 minutes left,
yeah.
And instead of trying to go for a full-fledged warm up, I just did a couple of efforts and still got the body temperature up and the legs woken up. So then I settled down at the start point. I was chatting with Nikhil from Crankmaster while I was having my gel 10 minutes before, and another thing which worked in my favor was that since I have not raced much in BBCH, the starting position was more towards the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So in a typical individual time trial, they would have the start list in the reverse order of your speed. So
mm-hmm.
the slowest guy would
mm-hmm.
typically start first, and the fastest person based on the past would start the last.
So just a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
You said drafting isn't allowed,
mm-hmm.
but couldn't someone just draft? Like if Akash was like behind me,
mm-hmm.
Then and I'm not riding very fast, then potentially
yeah.
Akash could choose to draft behind me.
Yeah, so
right?
You are right, perfectly right. There are well-defined rules for that, and you are supposed to overtake as fast as possible and not get closer than what, 5 meters?
Yeah, so apparently they had riders inspecting somewhere like throughout.
So
the
this
road.
Was policed. It wasn't
it
up
was
to
policed.
The individual.
Not exactly.
Rider.
Not all the way policed, but at some points
yeah,
there were people
right.
looking out if somebody is there or not.
Right. So it wasn't voluntary. That
yeah.
was that's for sure.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
okay.
I, and I mean not forget a rider. The road wasn't closed, so you are not allowed to do that even with traffic, and it was a highway, so.
Right, but I assume that a rider who is going to a race like BBCH probably knows drafting off vehicles is, you know, like genuinely dangerous. People might do it, but that sounds a little too dangerous, you know?
Yeah,
no, but there are riders who do that. since this is a community event, it cannot be policed 100%. But mostly people avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean... even in big races, people draft illegally. I mean, even I'm talking about UCI level races.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is if you have a mechanical or if you have had a fall, you are kind of allowed to draft the cars to get back to the peloton.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it is a very loosely written rule.
Right. Right.
There have been occasions when the commissioners have turned a blind eye to this,
mm-hmm.
and there have been occasions when people have been penalized for this as well. So it's a slightly gray area, especially when it comes to drafting a commissioner or a support car to get back to the peloton after a mechanical or after a fall. So it does happen, and
mm-hmm.
even in grand tours and world championships, people have been penalized or people have been let off and been questioned why they were let off.
So just a slight detour. And so I was watching this documentary about the Tour of France, and they would sort of hand out food while on the ride from the car. And the guy would sort of hold on to that food packet from... So he would basically hold on to someone inside the car for that extra second, and the manager acknowledged that, yeah, it's a gray area, we try not to cross the limit. So they were pretty open about it. They weren't hiding it or anything. They were on camera and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so that is a trick which almost every rider knows, and every rider actually takes advantage of it at some point in the race.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody does that.
Right. But on a different... it's a totally different context, of course. There is no rider, there is no car or anything handing out food to you in this race, but just an aside. There are gray areas.
There are gray areas, and sometimes the peloton is... the other side is also true. There
mm-hmm.
have been occasions when the leader of a race has controlled the pace or lowered the pace after a bad fall for some of the others to join,
mm-hmm.
or such instances. So there has been, while we talk about all these things, there is also great sportsmanship demonstrated in many of these races as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to the stages. Like, how did you train consciously for this particular event? Did you know where, did you divide it?
I'll go back and complete what happened on that day. So I had set a target of 38 kilometers per hour. Once the countdown started, I cleated in pretty fast. That was good. And then I got out of the saddle for a moment, settled down into a good pace, and got into my aero position very quickly. And I started maintaining a good rhythm. And like you said, just a little lower than what, rather than full gas. So, and fortunately for me, because I was starting so early, I very quickly overtook the rider right in front of me. There was only a 30 second gap at the start. So I started feeling better, and I also realized that the course is much faster. So at that point, I made a quick re-evaluation of my target, and I set it up, pushed it up to 40 rather than 38. I think that was one of the key reasons for me to do better, because
mm-hmm.
that realization, I don't know, it has never happened to me before.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow that day it happened, and I was pushing the speed a little higher while still keeping below my full power. I also felt much better that day because of training slightly heavy. What I mean by that is I have been training on my steel bike and aluminum bike with aluminum alloy wheels, and just before the race I took out the carbon wheels. So that transition really helped me, and I was feeling much faster because of this transition. And I think that is something everybody has to do. If you have access to a race equipment, you should ideally not be using it in the training situation. Two reasons. One is it helps you get stronger when you train with heavier equipment, and second reason is you are just protecting your best equipment for the most important occasions.
Mm-hmm.
I did lose a little bit of gas around the 14 kilometer mark, and there were a couple of barricades also which kind of slowed me, and I just think I got a little tired. But again, I was somehow able to realize that, and I planned my gel intake just at the turnaround point, and
mm-hmm.
I had my gel, and the during that slowing down period when I had to come off the clip-on bars, I took my gel and took the turn, and I started steadily increasing my speed, and after 25 kilometers per hour I was just put the pedal to the metal and gave it all, and I almost touched 40.
Mm-hmm.
I did a slightly lesser than 40 kilometers per hour, and I was pretty happy with the end result.
Good stuff. So Akash, what about you? How was your training? How did you think about the stages in this event?
Okay, so to begin with, after I was done with my national competitions later in the year, last year, I did not do well in the championships. So fire was lit in me to get stronger again and do well the following year. So I reached out to Gokul, we talked a bunch of things, what was the weakness, what went wrong that year. And Gokul agreed to coach me. And in the same, so this was December last year. He just asked me to continue doing some base miles and strength workouts. And in the new year, he'll start giving me the workouts, specific time training workouts and also other workouts to get stronger. So that was the main preparation behind this time trial. I had not done like specific high intensity efforts for this time trial because I was still early in the year and my main goal is still the nationals at the end of the year. So I had done, so a month and a half before Gokul and I, when we agreed to go to BBCH, we started doing some TT trials out in the road and also indoor workouts. So that was my training before the race.
Mm-hmm.
And to talk about the race, my plan of negative split did not go as per the what I had thought. I started out pretty good with a good power, but after the U-turn, I kind of lost focus. And in my perception, I was doing good power and good speed, but it turned out after I analyzed the ride after the race, it turned out that my speed in comparison with the other riders was pretty low and could have been higher.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Gokul also analyzed and told me. So these are some key points which I took from this race, and definitely I'll be doing more time trials in the coming year.
Mm-hmm.
So I can employ this.
So let's talk about some of the science that is involved in this. Tell me about this TT bars that you guys keep referring to.
Oh yeah, thanks for bringing that back, Harshal. So there is a very interesting story around how TT bars started coming into play in the ITT races. So Greg LeMond, the America's first Tour de France winner, I'll have to correct it, it's the only Tour de France winner now.
Yeah, now the only one.
So in 1989, in the Tour de France, he was the first to adopt the first generation of this TT bar, and Interestingly, there was an early individual time trial, I think it was a stage 5, wherein he used it and there was no problem with it. The officials agreed to that and they didn't raise any issues. The Aerobus are actually designed by somebody called Boone Lennon, who was a former US national ski coach. Obviously, there is a lot going on around aerodynamics, and he was probably better equipped than anybody in cycling at that time. So, and also the last stage or the penultimate stage of that year, 1989, was an individual time trial. And Greg was 50 seconds behind the yellow jersey holder at that point in time, the Frenchman Laurent Finot. So, at the start of the TT, and again, Greg came with this TT setup, and it's told that Finon's coach objected to it, and but they didn't mind, and the officials allowed it, and he had a fantastic time trial. He overtook Finon by 58 seconds and ended up winning the tour by 8 seconds because of the TT setup. So. And I don't think the TT Bass have even been, that was the beginning, and it was a fantastic start for a new technology, and it has become a golden standard now.
So Gokul, if you take out your TT Bar bike and I take out my regular Merida road bike, the difference will probably be 8 seconds then.
Depends on the legs also.
Hey.
The winner of my own category in the BBCH ITT was Venky, who was riding Merck style with just the road bars without clip-on bars. So
was that like a conscious decision on his part, or that just happened?
I really don't know why he did that. I know there are a couple of reasons probably which influenced that decision. One was he got in a new bike just 2 weeks before. So probably getting the TT position sorted out on that bike, he didn't have enough time. And another is, I know that his primary goals are around the road multi-day tour later, towards the middle of the year. And he's been training primarily for that. So he just probably thought, but I'm just guessing, I don't know.
So the next time, not the next time, the first time we have Venky on the show, maybe we can lead with this question.
So
you keep talking about aerodynamics, and we talked about aerodynamics a little bit in the previous episode, but that was more in terms of working as part of a group. How does aerodynamics work when it comes to an individual event? So especially because you don't have a group to work with here, right? You're on your own.
So yeah, I mean, even in that episode, I did mention about the differences in speed that can be attained by changing your hand position from the hoods to the drops. And that just goes one level further when you have a TT bar position. So and not just the bars, there are quite a few other things which you work together to make it more aerodynamic and faster. The frame tubes of TT bikes are different. They are slightly bigger and teardrop shaped, which allows the various the wind to kind of flow around the tubes and not cause turbulence, and thus reducing the reducing the impact of the aerodynamic. It's basically just faster. And similar thing applies also for wheels. So we have what are called as deep section wheels. Essentially, the rim profile is deeper, so that again it is aerodynamically faster. And it's so much so that there are a lot of people who are riding with complete disc wheels in the rear. The disadvantage of that is that when there is a crosswind, it becomes extremely difficult to control the bike. So
because your back wheel doesn't have the natural flow. It's basically a solid.
It acts like a sail of a yacht. So it just will swipe you under you. So that's why pretty much in very rare cases anybody uses a full disc in the front. But the rear disc is slightly easier to control. But again, if it was the crosswinds were heavy, people will probably go with less deeper rims or non-discs to make it more easier to control the bike. And also there are various other things like the shape of the helmet, the skin suits, which don't flap around, and all these things matter. So. But like again I said, there are riders who are riding without TT bars like Venky, and that's typically called the Merck style of riding. And again, it also depends on the profile or the elevation profile of the race. I remember a few years ago, 5-6 years ago, when Contador was still riding, and there was one of these very tricky stretches in Tour de France, which was a hill time trial,
mm-hmm.
and the stage was almost split into two parts with one very hilly section and one reasonably flat section. So I remember some riders actually decided to have a change of bike, Formula One style.
Mm-hmm.
So wherein at the end of the hilly section they would move on to the aero bars, because the aero bars is very difficult to climb on.
Mm.
You cannot, when you're climbing, you are trying to pull against the handlebar and get leverage to generate more power, which you cannot do. So it depends on that as well, and you know, it's always a balance of finding out the right things, you know. Another thing is the TT setup is not unique only to bicycle racing. It is also very common in triathlons, especially above the Olympic triathlons. The reason I'm saying above Olympic triathlons is till Olympic triathlons, the rules allow you to draft another rider.
Right.
So when you are allowed to draft another rider, you are not allowed to have a TT setup.
Right.
So you are still on road bike drop bars. But in half Ironman and full Ironman distances, you are allowed to have the TT setup, and you are not allowed to draft another rider. So people use this, but there are still minor differences between a TT bike and a triathlon bike, because of funnily the differences in the organizing committees.
Mm-hmm.
All the road races are organized or under the control of UCI, and the World Triathlon Union controls the or whatever other body it is called controls
mm-hmm.
the triathlon rules, and the rules of the bike frames is very different. So the triathlon bikes are even more aerodynamic, and they have much lesser rules. There are some rules around what is the position of your saddle with relative to the handlebar, and with relative position to the bottom bracket area, and also you can be more forward, allowing you to go more aerodynamic in a triathlon bike.
So,
mm-hmm.
So Akash, did you have the teardrop helmet? And can you also explain why a teardrop helmet?
So the idea behind teardrop helmet is the helmet aligning correctly with your body shape when you are stooped down on the TT bars. So I did not have a teardrop helmet, but I have heard that the specific TT helmet can save you up to 10 to 12 watts of power. So that is pretty significant, and it is recommended if you are serious about time trialing that you invest in a good TT helmet like that.
Mm-hmm. So are you interested? And
yes, I am. So this was not my, this was just a tryout for the races coming on this year. So I am planning to get into a full TT gear by the end
mm-hmm.
of the year and do well in the nationals.
Cool. So let us sort of move away from BBCH and say someone's watching the Tour of France. And can you explain why the time trial event is so significant in one of the bigger events? Why is it significant?
One simple thing is, even Tour de France, the race format changes every year.
Mm-hmm.
They announce the race format, the distance, number of days, the number of time trials, number of team time trials, which hills are there, and so on, about 10 months before the race.
Mm-hmm.
So each year is different, but there has hardly been ever a race without a single individual time trial. And the individual time trial is generally called as the true test of cycling. So you don't have anywhere to hide. So if you are a poor time trialist, you could lose a lot of time in that. So, over the last few years, people who have been good at TT have been winning Tour de France or the Grand Tours. The only exception is probably Nairo Quintana, who's a very poor time trialist and a very strong climber.
Mm-hmm.
And that is probably the reason he has not yet won the Tour de France, but the Giro and Vuelta, which are more hilly and steeper climbs typically. And a new revelation is Tom Dumoulin, who was kind of rides even a hilly section like a TT, because he's been a fantastic time trialist, and he seems to just go and ride in TT mode in a climb, and people just can't figure out what to do with him, and he just keeps reappearing after every climb. So unless there is some big change, I see the Tour de France still being won by people who are good at time trialists. The latest revelation, Primoz Roglic, who came in fourth and was just pipped by Chris Froome in the last couple of stages in last year's Tour de France. He's a very good time trialist, he's a good climber. Very interestingly, we talked about skiing, and he was a junior world champion in skiing, and his ski career came to a drastic stop because of a bad accident.
Mm-hmm.
And then he moved on to cycling, and he's been killing it in cycling now. So right now things are pointing to a strong TT rider being able to win a grand.
Yeah, so to add some points about Primoz Roglic, actually. So there was this stage race called Tirreno Adriatico, which just finished yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the world's strongest riders, Adam Yates, was ahead of Primoz Roglic by 25 seconds, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And in the final TT, Primoz Roglic was faster than 26 seconds.
Oh.
So he just won the entire stage race by just one
by
second.
By just one, yeah, all right, yeah.
So that is how a time trial is
mm-hmm.
crucial.
That's great. So Akash, I want you to make a promise.
Yeah, sure.
You're ready for this? This is like a big one, okay? Once you give the commitment, you can't go back on this. Okay?
I'll try. Okay.
This isn't, nobody's going to police you on this.
Okay?
Okay? This is totally voluntary, and I mean, our listeners will definitely hold you to account.
You're saying voluntary and you're giving
him no, but our listeners will hold him to account.
Right.
So, when you are going off to participate in the Tour of France,
okay,
irrespective of your media commitments,
okay,
you should promise to come as a guest on our show.
definitely I'll that will be the
because this isn't just a promise to me, our listeners, you know, they'll hold you to it.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah, so this is where the promise is being made, so I'll remember them and do my part.
That's great
you
we
should
have
set a condition that it should be recorded in France.
So you heard it, people. A future Tour of France participant just promised to talk to us after he's selected to go to Tour of France.
Yeah. Harsha, before you conclude, I just wanted to tell something, because we also try
mm-hmm.
to talk about training and stuff
right.
like that. An individual time trial, however you ride it, Merck style or a TT setup, is a fantastic benchmark to set for yourself and train for it. If you look at the UK amateur circuit and stuff like that, there are time trials happening
multiple times in a week,
mm-hmm.
and people are just looking at training and improving and doing their best. So it's a great motivation, because few reasons is it is probably the safest race.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is in your control and everything is measurable. So
mm-hmm.
you can very easily measure your progress. In a mass start, somebody, you may be doing very well, somebody falls right in front of you and you crash
yeah.
out.
Yeah, everyone crashes.
And,
yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
any new rider could set that as a benchmark and train for that and look at that as a measurement
mm-hmm.
of their progress.
Yeah.
And hopefully Akash is also one of the organizers of HRC, and I guess they will be doing their part by conducting time trials often in HRC, and we should find a way for people to plan out and keep testing themselves and keep working and improving.
So I think I just got like a brilliant idea for a future episode, maybe not next one, but somewhere down the line, that where you will counsel me on what is best for my training. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, Akash sort of talked to you and came up with like a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I should like talk to you about my goals and also lack of commitment and stuff like that. And maybe you can counsel me into something. So something for another day. So that was this week's episode. And a big shout out to Karthik Chinnaya, who left us a wonderful review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you, Karthik. As always, this is your host, Harsha.
And this is Gokul.
This is Akash signing off. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Akash. It was great to hear your insights.
You can hear us on all popular podcast apps. Please review and rate the show. If you don't find us on a particular app, please let us know by mailing us at podcast@thebikeaffair.com. Do recommend the podcast to your friends and give us your thoughts on what you would like us to cover. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.